know there was any credibility. I didn't know if there was anything behind it. I can't vouch for the information. Now, someone sent me an email. In retrospect, I probably would have done things a little differently.
I'm an old man. I'm not even the same man I was 20 years ago. I'm not the same fighter I was 10 years ago. I'm not the same fighter I was 5 years ago. I'm not the same fighter I was 2 years ago. But I got enough to beat you.
Many, I would say most Australian Republicans are Elizabethans as well.
I've come to Mosul today to follow up on our victories and on the eradication of ISIL, which we are close to achieving.
The Liberal Party, which he firmly anchored in the centre of Australian politics. The sensible centre, to use my predecessor Tony Abbott's phrase, was the place to be, and it remains the place to be now.
I think the speech was unremarkable. It did talk about the two strands within the Liberal Party that has always been there.
Brawling over Australia's energy policy has ramped up a notch today, ahead of a meeting of energy ministers in Brisbane tomorrow. State Labor governments are threatening to go it alone on a clean energy target if the federal government continues to delay adopting one. Meanwhile, the federal government is hoping to force states to lift moratoriums on gas exploration.
A memorandum lays out a series of steps the two countries will take over the coming months and years to interrupt and disable terror financing flows and intensify counterterrorism activities globally.
In capital cities around Europe, there is a smell of blood in the water, a sense that the UK's financial services industry has been wounded by Brexit.
11-month-old Charlie Gard mightn't know it himself, but he has enormous support in Britain.
Chris Gard and Connie Yates said, "We are continuing to spend every moment working around the clock to save our dear baby Charlie."
At their joint news conference, Donald Trump had only the strongest of praise for France and for Emmanuel Macron, who he described as a great president, a tough president. Going further, he even implied he'd been swayed by the French leader's arguments over the need to fight climate change, saying at one point, "Something could happen on the Paris Accord, we shall see."
You're on Nightlife, and time to look back at the week that was.
The week that was.
And joining me tonight is Mark Rolfe. He's a lecturer from the School of Social Sciences at the University of New South Wales. Good evening.
Good evening, Sarah.
And we also have Paige Taylor, the Australian's WA Bureau Chief. Hi, Paige.
Hello there.
I want to start with something that's just happened really today, and this was a shock resignation from the Australian Parliament of a Green senator who had dual citizenship. Now, a barrister found the information that Scott Ludham had New Zealand citizenship that he didn't really seem to remember about as he left the country when he was three. Now, we're going to look at exactly what happened here, and Mark may be able to explain this, but Paige, you are from WA and Scott is a Green senator from WA. What sort of bloke isn't he? He's one of the few in Parliament with a sense of humour, isn't he?
Yes, and I think he really likes to cultivate that. He's got a sense of fun. And even today, when at this, which was at a press conference, which was obviously not a high point for him, he was still cracking jokes and trying to, not trying to trivialise it, but trying to lighten it up. He looked like he was in shock, actually.
Yeah, here's a little bit of Scott Ludlam this afternoon.
"I've got no wish to draw out legal uncertainty or create any kind of lengthy dispute, particularly when that section of the Constitution is so clear. So I'm resigning as a senator for Western Australia."
All right, now, Mark, what is he talking about? What has he done that means under the Constitution he actually shouldn't have even been there?
It relates to Section 44 of the Constitution and exclusions from being a participant of Parliament. So it mentions treason and undischarged bankrupt and also being a subject or citizen of a foreign power. And so having dual citizenship, being an Australian and a New Zealander, is not allowed by the Constitution if you want to be a member of Parliament.
Right, because we're allowed one.
But you're not allowed one
if you're swearing allegiance to the Australian Parliament.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
So that's the problem that he, in a sense, created for himself. And he didn't renounce his New Zealand citizenship before entering Parliament. especially when he took out Australian citizenship when he was a teenager.
Right. Well, he probably thought then he didn't need to.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows, when you're a teenager, you probably think, I didn't need to give up my old one. So it seems he wasn't aware that he was still
Nor did many teenagers think about becoming members of Parliament.
No.
Usually something else.
Yeah.
So, and he hasn't been living in New Zealand since he was about three or so.
Right.
And came to Australia when he was nine. So I think it's one of those occasions where it slipped to the back of his mind.
Wow.
Yes, wow, is a considerable blow to the Greens at this stage when they've had these internal ructions. And Ludlam has been one of their very effective public hitters, which is what Page was essentially saying with his use of humour against the likes of Pauline Hanson and others.
But isn't it something about, like, he was never meant to have been there? He was sort of been illegitimate the whole time he's been there, and he's been voting on legislation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it won't wind back those votes on legislation.
Yeah.
But there'll
repeal
be
the laws. It,
well, that's right. Yeah. Let's all start again. Instead, there'll be a recount of the votes from the last election. And it looks like at this stage that those votes may devolve upon a young man, 22 years old, Jordan Steele John, I think his name is, who, by all accounts that I've read, he's in a bit of a state of shock at this moment with the prospect of Parliament arising for him.
Oh, my gosh, imagine that phone call. Right. So, Page, pretty shocking for Western Australia. I'm assuming that this is quite big news in the West.
It was the biggest story in Western Australia today, yes. And we all arrived at the press conference. We knew it was a big announcement, and because Scott had difficulties at the end of last year and took a break, and he was quite open about the fact that was because he needed to and wanted to seek treatment for depression and anxiety, we kind of jumped to the conclusion that he was quitting for that reason.
Ah.
But he came straight out and said he was quitting, and then he told us why, and we were all slack-jawed. I just did not see that coming.
Mm. And how did he seem?
He seemed really shocked.
Yeah.
And the other members of the Greens Party I spoke to today said he is still shocked. It's still quite new. And I think, you could tell by the looks on their faces, they were deeply miserable. He is a star for them, and so it's a big loss. My colleague Victoria Laurie had a really good interview today, which will be in the Australian tomorrow, with the fellow who unearthed his citizenship, and he did not, as far as we can tell, do it for political reasons. He's someone who's an enthusiast for the Constitution and for the letter of the law.
Well, he's a barrister, isn't he?
Yes.
Who is he?
He's a guy called John Cameron, and he's a long-time Perth lawyer. He's got a really long and strong record in the area of social justice. I think the trial that I remember him most for was an Aboriginal woman who had died in custody after the mattress she was on had caught fire. He's done some cases for quite disadvantaged people. Mm.
And so what, he was just digging around in all the parliamentarians' background to see who came from different countries and then got... Because I understand the information he got from New Zealand is not publicly available.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not saying he got it by nefarious means. I'm just saying that he must have been doing some research. I wonder if he had a bit of a hint about it, or it'd be really interesting to know how it all came about.
I think, I know journalists are supposed to be really good at finding things, but
lawyers are better.
Lawyers are pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
They're pretty good, yeah.
Forensic attention to detail, huh?
And I think sometimes lawyers, even more so than journalists, can be obsessive, and I don't mean to be unkind about Mr. Cameron, but there are a group of people who respect the letter of the law in a way that the rest of us may not even think about, you know. And so if something's important to you, it's important to you. And, look, I mean, it doesn't take long. You hop on the internet and you can see for years now there's been a certain group of people who've been quite focused on this Section 44 of the Constitution and who may be breaching it and who isn't. And from what I can gather, there are some countries where, for example, Malaysia, where I believe Penny Wong was born, when you take up Australian citizenship, your citizenship to the country where you were born falls away automatically. But that's not the case for every country.
Obviously not for New Zealand.
True.
Uh-huh. So I wonder if there's other members of parliament now checking furiously to see if they came from another country, whether they're still citizens, don't you reckon? They're going, Mum, remember when we got here? Be interesting. But, yeah, it's quite a shocking story. So thanks for qualifying it for us. And, yes, big news for the West Australian Greens, as you said. They're reeling tonight. And when will we know? Do either of you know when we'll know what happens next and if this young 22-year-old man is confirmed as the next senator and when he begins and the like?
I'm trying to think of recent examples. And astonishingly, there have been a few, haven't there? And it's taken weeks to figure it out.
Especially with Bob Day.
Yes.
There was the recount there.
Yeah.
Which led to Lucy and...
Yes. Coming in. Yeah.
Kachui. I'm probably mispronouncing her name. But yes, she took his seat. So there was the recount there by the Electoral Commission.
Right. Okay. And interesting times we live in.
Yeah. I'm not even sure that the number three on the ticket wants the job. Mm. That's a problem for the Greens, I guess, if that turns out to be true.
Oh, my gosh. What if he doesn't want it?
Well, I got the sense today the Greens put out an email to reporters imploring us to give this young man his privacy, and someone told me on the quiet he just needs to work out what he wants to do. And I thought, oh, well, you know, perhaps he's in shock because someone he admires has lost their political career, or perhaps he's thinking, oh, dear, this is not what I expected or wanted. Who knows?
Yeah, and there's no way that Scott Ludlam could give up his New Zealand citizenship and come back.
George Williams, the constitutional expert, has a view on that. And I've heard other people say it today too, that if it would be complicated, but if the number three on the ticket took the position, he or she could then resign and Scott could come back. But that would mean Scott would have to want to do that. And he seemed today to be very keen to cause as small amount of trouble for his party as he can.
Let's go a bit wider now in terms of politics. And I thought it was really interesting. This is one thing I did hear about when I was on holidays earlier in the week, and that was Malcolm Turnbull telling his party this week and leading a conversation about the Liberals being Liberals, not necessarily Conservatives. Mark, I know what triggered this, and it's the whole Barney going on within his party, isn't
and,
it?
And that gentleman.
Mr. Abbott, as Julia Gillard used to call him. Is he right?
Look, yes, essentially, with a bit of history and context needed, though. It is, of course, named the Liberal Party for precise reasons, as some commentators have said, because Menzies didn't want to create a reactionary party. What he had in mind was departing any association, cutting any association in the public mind with the United Australia Party, which was the predecessor and had great public distaste. And there was an ideological change on the right in which they adopted the welfare state. So they wanted to portray the party as progressive. And the term conservative, said Menzies, had no place in this party. And to be fair, the term has always had a precarious existence in Australia since the 19th century. Essentially, conservatives were defeated in the 1860s. And hence...
What do you mean? Who were they and why were they defeated?
Well, they were defeated essentially because you had, if you may remember, William Wentworth and others who wanted to create a sort of aristocracy here and restrict the franchise in the new colonial parliaments of the 1850s. And they were defeated on that. There was the opening up to universal white male franchise, and that provided the entree to women's franchise in the 1890s, white women's franchise. So conservatives lost that major battle. And essentially, Australian politics has been variations of liberalism, the philosophy I'm talking about here, of course. So in that respect, we've never had a coherent conservative ideology to match an aristocracy. And since then, it's only been really with John Howard that you get the arrival of the term conservative, essentially talking about social issues. And of course, the use of the culture wars, which he derived from America in the 1990s.
We have an American form of conservatism.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. Not a British form.
Right.
And hence, it's revolved around these issues of same-sex marriage and the mainstream versus the elites and all this sort of stuff. So what I think we have at the moment is this really great difficulty for conservatives in Australia, but also elsewhere, to cope with the changing context.
Mm. What did you make of this week, Paige, and what do you think it says about what's going on in the government at the moment?
Well, that was the angle at which I was that I was most interested in. I'm thinking, what message is he sending to those coming at him? That's how I read it.
Yeah,
and I mean, you cannot. As I was reading, I was thinking, apart from being a bit of a step back, telling his opponents to step back, I thought it was quite a beautiful speech, which you'd expect from Turnbull anyway. But he seemed to make his point in a way that was both gentle and brutal. That's what I thought.
Did you? Gentle and brutal? Yeah, okay.
Both.
Yeah, right. Well, meanwhile, he was in the UK, of course, this week, and he met the Queen.
Prime Minister of Australia, Your Majesty.
Your Majesty.
Good to be here.
And you seem to have had quite a busy time too.
I have. I've been at the G20 in Hamburg and then in France, meeting the new president, and of course I've been here with Prime Minister May. We had a very moving visit to the London Bridge and Borough Market.
Oh,
we were able to thank the police and first responders who.
Yes, because that was a...
Went there so bravely and so swiftly.
Terrible thing, wasn't it?
Yes.
Would you like to come and have a seat?
Thank you.
Yes, they were very brave, weren't they, though?
Well. Even Republicans like myself can be, and in my case are, very strong Elizabethans. Many, I would say most Australian Republicans are Elizabethans as well.
I think it says a lot about our current Queen, doesn't it, Paige, that one of our most ardent Republicans sounded... most charmed and said he was now an Elizabethan and always has been.
Yeah, it was pretty clever thing to say. And
yeah.
What else will you say, actually?
Yeah. Although it was interesting, he didn't get, you know, a lot of people meet the Queen, they all of a sudden start speaking in a very English accent.
I was listening for that.
He
I thought, is he going to bung it on? Or?
No, he didn't. He just stayed like, remember Molly Meldrum when he met Prince Charles on Countdown? He all of a sudden started talking like this. You know, it's Molly, g'day, hello, Prince Charles. Everybody seems to do it.
I do
on their best
that.
Behaviour.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I've done it too. Not that I've met the Queen, but I'm guilty of that. You start to adopt the...
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, give me 5 minutes in America. I'm like, you're kidding me. Oh, my gosh, you know. But, yes, I thought that he handled it quite deftly, didn't he, Mark? I wonder, though, about the Republican cause, how... It's, you know, it sort of seems to be so much on the back burner, doesn't it now? And I wonder with events in America, if, you know, there's a great love, there's a push factor, well, there's a pull factor to keep it away, which I think is the Queen, and then the push factor of what's going on in the States. I think it's really off the agenda now.
I think so. And as Paige said, what else would he say in the circumstances? So he's understandably being very polite, and that's fine. And as well, I think there's political... calculations that he's protecting his flank from his right wing. He doesn't want to stir up any more trouble at the moment in the wake of what Christopher Pyne said about same-sex marriage. So try and keep things on an even keel. And as well, with as you say, republicanism is on the back burner. The question of a presidential system, I think, could be at the forefront of people's minds if it's raised. And we've got this certain orange gentleman over in the United States who brings that sharply into focus for a lot of people who say, well, if you're going to have a presidential system, is it going to be like the United States? I don't think so. So, yes, I think circumstances at the moment are against the Republican movement until after the Queen dies, you know, and there's that generally accepted idea, we'll leave it until then and then revisit it.
Yeah, well, she was looking pretty good.
She was.
Yeah, and she, of course.
And her mum lasted a long time as well.
Now, how old was the Queen mum? I'm not a
About 103, royal... I think, or something like that.
Was she? She passed the big 100?
Yeah.
Paige, do you know? You're a royalist?
No, I clearly recall it was over 100, but I'm sorry, I can't remember.
Yeah. Okay. And, of course, he met with Theresa May as well, that he referred to with the Queen there, and talked about security and the like. Now, I'm not up on this because I've been on holiday. Was there anything much come out of that meeting, Mark, that we need to know about? Pleasantries and...
I think it was mostly pleasantries. And Britain's got enough on its plate with trying to handle Brexit at the moment.
Well, Malcolm Turnbull is probably feeling like he's doing all right compared to Theresa May. Don't you think? She's having a pretty shocking time.
It's not fun to watch, is it?
No, well, I think a lot of politicians feeling under the brutal blowtorch, really, of what's going on at the moment. Let's go overseas. We mentioned the States and how it's probably, you know, not helping the Republican cause here. We will talk later on to Andrew Romano about what's going on in the States. But, Paige, what did you think we really need to know about this week, about the latest in events in America with, it's not so much about Donald Trump this week, it's about Donald Trump Jr., isn't it?
That was the story that gripped me. I couldn't read enough about it, and I'm still not sure I quite understand all of it. But I was fascinated by the strategy of releasing that email trail just apparently as he realised the New York Times was about to publish them. And then, of course, that allows his supporters to say he's being transparent.
Yeah, I think they gave him till 11 a.m. to respond. They said, we've got them, you've got till 11 a.m. And at 11 a.m. he released them on Twitter. So he's sort of copying some elements of Dad there of going with Twitter, wasn't he?
Talking directly to his people.
Yeah. And Mark, what did the email show? What do we need to know about this? The Queen Mother was 101, by the way, before
101.
We go on. Vanessa
okay.
looked it up. 101 she
okay.
made it.
Thank
Good
you.
Innings, yeah.
Yes, very much so. Look, despite the protests of Kellyanne Conway and Breitbart and Fox News, who say, well, you know, what's the problem? I think that's a diversion from the major problem with the Trump administration and the supporters, that there's a denial of any connection to Russia continually over the last year. And then we find these things do come out eventually. Why did they say these lies in the first place then? I mean,
there was meetings.
Repeatedly, you know, with Michael Flynn, with Paul Manafort, the campaign manager, and now Donald Trump Jr., denial, 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 and then it comes out. So even if this all doesn't result in any charge of illegalities, in a sense, they've given the impression to people that where there was smoke, there has been fire. And hence, they've made it worse for themselves, which is the repeated governing strategy of this administration. In a sense, they tie themselves up in knots and then blame the media and the Democrats for tying those knots themselves. So it's unusual in the way this continually happens with this administration.
We will talk in greater detail about the significance and what's happening next with Andrew Romano, but you've got a story from the States which is it's a bit of light relief, and it's about about InfoWars. Now, tell us about this. It's amused you this week.
Oh, yes. Look, if the listeners don't know of Alex Jones in InfoWars, it's... He's a conspiracy-minded radio host and YouTuber and one of the prime backers of Donald Trump, so much so that the day after his election victory, Trump rang Jones and thanked him. He's been interviewed on Alex Jones radio and YouTube interviews. Now, last week, Alex Jones had a guest on saying that for more than 20 years, NASA has been sending child sex slaves to Mars, that there is a colony of these children on Mars. This week, he was on saying that there are pig or gorilla humanoids.
That, on Mars?
Oh, no, they're back on Earth. Right. But it gets connected again to paedophilia. Paedophilia is one of the prime themes running through all these programs because there's always this conspiracy. You may remember Pizzagate from last year, in which Hillary Clinton was running a child sex trafficking operation from a pizza parlor in Washington. So you
that was from this show as well.
And
right.
that was from you know, right. Jones's show as well.
Okay, but
and
so, what are the pig people doing?
Well, this is where, and this is where you get a very, very small grain of truth, i.e. a National Geographic article of the splicing of non-human animals, genes, I should be very specific, with some human genes, and I'm not a scientist.
Pigs and humans, yeah.
In order to create, yes, organs for human transplant.
Right.
But this has been blown out of proportion into they're creating these gorilla or pig type people who can talk.
Oh, okay. Sounds like you've been reading a Margaret Atwood novel, you know, of a dystopian future. She had people in one of her novels.
And he expands it to say he's been told repeatedly there's all these people, they can talk, these gorilla or pig-type people, they can talk, and they're being created by this vast conspiracy.
Does Donald Trump still go on his show?
Not lately. Not lately.
I think the mainstream media has been asleep at the wheel on this story.
Yeah, I think yes. they have, Paige.
I think
that
it needs
up.
To break open in Western Australia, particularly Paige. There's an opportunity for you there.
Thank you. I'm going to throw everything at it. Sorry.
We should have crazy story of the week on this segment. You've just started a new segment for me,
good.
Mark, because, yeah.
There's plenty out there.
The craziest, wackiest conspiracy theory of the week. Right. All right. Let's talk about some reality now before you give your recommendations. And we're going to go to Broken Hill for our pub test this week, find out what they've been talking about in Broken Hill. What were you going to say, Paige?
I was going to say, great. My sister lives in Broken Hill.
Does she? Well, I'm that's my next road trip. I've just been on one road trip and now I'm because we keep chatting to Broken Hill, I'm hoping to go to Broken Hill later on in the year. So, yes, we'll say hi to your sister. She might even be in the pub in the background. You never know.
Hi, Chelsea.
Not yet. Not yet. All right. So let's talk about the economy with the latest news on the Australian economy in just a moment. But I want to talk about the Western Australian Mental Health Services. This has been a huge story in Western Australia. Tell us about this, Paige. What do we need to know?
Well, it came from the ABC. It was a story about some of the – it was essentially about the – what you might call fringe services, although fringe is not a very kind word. They're not the core services. They're the services that are run by NGOs. And the crux of this story was that they are really suffering and that they're not funded in the way that they need to be and that there is a mental health crisis in WA. Look, I think there has been a mental health crisis in WA for a very long time, and I wouldn't mind saying that it's pretty obvious. It's much of it's connected to our methamphetamine problem. We have a huge issue with ICE in Western Australia, and a lot of people think that came with the boom when we had the construction phase of the resources boom. The dealers came for the cashed up miners and pretty soon they saw everyone as a customer.
Yeah.
I'm not sure our police commissioner Carla Callahan agrees entirely with that, but there are a lot of people who in those towns in the Pilbara especially who say that their town was awash with ice in a way that it wasn't before the boom.
Mm.
And so but I was really surprised to read that story because under the Barnett government, which has just been kicked out of office in March, there was a massive investment in all the social services, really, but especially mental health. In the first 7 years, it went up by over 50%. And Colin Barnett appointed a mental health minister and he established a mental health commission, which was completely separate to the health department. And the NGOs that I was talking to up until about 2015, 2016, were saying that things are better funded than they had been for over a decade. They were they were pretty happy about. Right. I'm not saying that they were keeping up with demand. The demand is huge, but
yeah.
they never. Their complaint was never a lack of commitment or funding from the government. It's just not clear to me what's gone on in the last 18 months or so. I'm wondering if it's because the state's broke or if it's because the problem has somehow gotten even bigger. It's a bit of a mystery.
Right. I must say what caught my attention this week was a story on the ABC about painkillers being traded now. You know, like we've been hearing so much about ice over the last few years, but now prescription painkillers being the next big area of healthcare and addiction, and old people being kind of bullied out of their painkillers and forced to sell them on the black market. So I think it's the next area in the healthcare that's really going to be a big focus.
We've heard a lot about it in the United States with the recent election, and I hadn't heard about the opioid crisis
until in the States.
Lately.
Yeah, absolutely massive. We might do a story on it, but it's things like these opioid, they're very addictive.
Mm.
They're strong painkillers, and they're often but people doctor shop. And I know Heath Ledger's father was talking about it on ABC TV this week because what happened with him.
Yeah.
I think among themselves, people who are looking for that know where they can go in terms of which GPs will not ask questions. They share that information.
Mm.
It may be a crisis that's been under the media radar until now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think we'll be hearing a lot more about that one. We'll go to our pub test soon and we'll get Paige and Mark's recommendations. But before we do that, some more information coming out about the Australian economy this week. Mark, what do we need to know?
That this is a report from an economist at the Commonwealth Bank in which the Australian economy is still struggling. There are bright spots provided by housing and, of course, immigration, who are providing more consumers, which are helping business.
Mm.
But they, in a sense, clothe the problems that are elsewhere, such as underemployment as well as unemployment. And we've never really focused on underemployment, which is a major problem, which is, of course, also tied to the great casualisation of the labour force in Australia, which has been towards the top of the OECD for decades now. We've generally had about sort of 25, 26% of the workforce as casual, which is a real difficulty for a lot of people to make ends meet, obviously.
Yeah.
And hence, we have got this problem in Australia as elsewhere of how do you get growth going when especially wages are going backwards in real terms.
And that's job insecurity.
And job insecurity.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's, in a sense, an investment strike with a lot of businesses in Australia, as elsewhere, which contributes to this deflationary spiral and the problem with productivity. And so the author of the report says, well, you know, maybe we should wind back immigration a little bit because of the pressure on infrastructure and various other problems, although he does emphasise a variety of policies are needed to cope with the Australian economy at the moment. So I just want to emphasise for those who might think, oh, let's cut immigration to solve all the problems. It's not simply that way. It would be, I think, in his terms, although I haven't read the report, a gradual cut, short term, and in combination with a variety of things. Because if you cut immigration, you will slow down the economy because of those less mouths for business, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And Paige, I'm thinking in Western Australia in particular, in terms of the economy and casualisation of the workforce, this is a big issue as well.
Yes, unemployment's become a problem in WA in a way that it hasn't been for a very long time. We've had boom years for about a decade. But I think on that issue of immigration, one of the visas, it's called the 457 visas. These are the skilled workers. That was a saviour for Western Australia at a time when we had 1,000 people a week moving across to WA from other states, and we still couldn't find enough workers. But I think it's always so hard to get the response in a timely way, if that makes sense. So you have you For example, in the Pilbara, we were trying to build housing when there was a housing shortage. Now there's a housing glut because the timing was there was a lag there, you know. Yeah. And I think the same thing sometimes happens with skilled workers. They arrive late and then they're there when they're no longer needed because it's just not possible to get what you want exactly when you want it.
Mm, indeed. All right, we're going to get your recommendations in just a minute, but let's check in with the pub.
The pub test.
And the pub test tonight, our publican is Steve Slifka from the Old Royal in Broken Hill because it's Bastille Day. There's a French theme going on at the pub tonight. So, hello, Steve. How's Bastille Day? You all dressed up?
Sort of got dressed up, but our patrons did. We had everything from berets and the red stripes and blue striped shirts, and we have a local ukulele group, and they came down and really got stuck into the some of the French patriotic songs, and I got some French pâté from a Frenchman in Portsmouth, and everything from stuffed goosenecks to all sorts of stuff. It was it was really good and interesting and quite tasty. I actually cooked up some. I did 5 lamb legs and a shoulder. You know, I made up a mustard type of sauce with honey and herbs and, you know, the usual garlic and stuff, and really come up really wonderful. So that was a hit.
Ooh la la, sounding fantastic. Now I've got Paige with me and Mark, and Paige's sister lives in Broken Hill, so she's probably at your pub right now.
Sounds great.
Well, she's wishing. Paige is going to ring her and tell her to get down there. So what have people been talking about this week in the pub? What's making news at the bar that people are chatting about?
There was a few things. There was a lot of social media associated with a train that the government has allocated for a festival up here. It's a hill festival. It's a sort of drag queen on the flame of Priscilla of the Desert. It was really a great thing that the Palace Hotel's putting on for Broken Hill, and they made a train available. I think seats about 180 people from Sydney, but people then sort of in really really bad social media sort of attacking that, versus, you know, a service for elderly and all this sort of stuff, and really the bad, really, how can I put it,
Was it the pile-on of the week? We always have a pile-on of the week, and perhaps that was it. Right. What was that? There was 180 drag queens on a train.
That'd be an interesting ride. I reckon they'd have some fun anyway.
So. Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that was a pile-on. What else have people been discussing? Any national or international concerns?
Trump comes up all the time. It's getting to stage. We just have a bit of a laugh and a scoff about him, and I think he's... Sons look like he's in the thick of it, particularly getting caught out now with the having some conversation with a person, associated with the Russians, I suppose. So that's, we're all sort of talking about wondering when they're going to go, or when he's going to retire or quit, or what's going to happen with him. But, you know, on that side, locally, there's some talk about other mining benches. So there's some talk about opening some gas fields up. There's some discussion about, you know, there's goods and bad. I think the left of the field, the Greens, are reluctant. They don't want another gas field opening. And so forth. But I think the biggest thing that people are concerned about is our power costs at the moment going up. That's a really concern for Broken Hill at the moment.
Well, indeed, I think it's a concern across the country. And, you know, the minister's still meeting about that today, about energy. People getting pretty frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so what's for the rest of Bastille Day? Some French champagne?
We've only got these small bottles. I don't think they measure up. But most of them are drinking the normal Aussie stuff. I just put a new beer on, so from Stainwood over the East Coast. It's called Cloud Catcher. Quite a nice beer. That's an advert, I'm supposed to say, but anyway.
You always make me feel thirsty.
So that's been a big hit. Everyone's just doing their own thing and quite enjoyable. Eating the lamb rolls that I've made up, and, which is a good thing. So, yeah.
All right. All good. Okay, I'm coming to your next driving trip.
Okay.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Catch ya.
See ya. Bye. Steve Slifka, who is from the Old Royal in Broken Hill, where they're having Bastille Day. They're still talking about Donald Trump.
Welcome.
Culture Club.
You're on Nightlife. Time to finish up our week that was by telling you what you can do on the weekend, how to take your mind off reality with some recommendations about what you can see, hear or listen to. Paige Taylor, what have you been watching on TV?
Well, I'm not embarrassed to tell you how much I love Australian Ninja Warrior.
You and like 2 million Australians, I think, yeah?
It's so good. So I don't know. I mean, I'm 42, turning 43 this year. I used to really be into It's a Knockout. But this is slicker, Sarah, you know. It's got, they give you a little story about each person and it's always quite interesting. But what I really appreciate is that it's not a story where they're trying to tug at your heartstrings or overshare. So you don't have to listen to, as you do sometimes on MasterChef or MKR, the full life story. You just get a bit of a taste. And
you don't want too much because then they do all these magnificent feats in the air, jumping, and they're so strong. They're incredible.
Yes, and I sort of, I think I'm having a vicarious, workout and as I recline on the couch with a cup of tea. And
yeah, as they swing through the air and do superhuman feats, hanging from things and then falling into the pool, you're like, yep.
And then we say, oh, come on. Well, we're sitting on the lounge there.
What can you get from that thing to the next one? What's wrong with you?
I know. That when they fall off on the first stage, I think, well, you weren't even trying. I probably couldn't, yeah.
I couldn't even climb up to the platform that they start on, I don't think.
Exactly. It does look incredibly hard. The most impressive contestants so far have been two boys, 24-year-old twins, who are very good at, I never pronounce this right, parkour. And they had that amazing combination of agility, strength and lightness, I think, which is the key. Yeah. I know all about this.
Explain what parkour is for people. The young people are so into it. My son just jumps around everywhere when I take him out and I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, parkour.
It's amazing. So people, they usually find a maybe an empty building or something that's got a staircase. You jump off it and do lots of somersaults. You run up walls and it can be quite balletic. Is that the right word? And they film themselves and play it to music on YouTube. I first learned about it because the Oswalds, who were billionaires but no more, at the height of WA's boom, they started to build this amazing mansion on the river in Perth and then ran out of money and left the country. And so the kids loved to go there and jump off. And so we did a story about that. And I started to learn that, if the building's only half finished, that's perfect because there's no furniture or anything to get in your way. And you can.
Yeah, they use sort of everyday objects and streets and objects and jump around. It's a huge thing. All right, so, yes, it's on Channel 9, isn't it?
Yeah,
is on
it is, and it starts on Sunday. So we've only had week one. I'm fresh and into it. You know, just at the end of the season, I might decide it's tiresome, but at the moment, I'm loving it.
No, it's been the huge hit of free to air TV. I'd say almost this year, really. So it's
such fun.
Yeah, good. All right. Well, you can get fit. Maybe they'll have an old one. Armchair Ninja Warriors. How far can you lift your wine glass to your lips while standing on one leg? Mark, what are you reading?
Kill All Normies by Amanda Nagel, and that's about the toxic online political culture. And she starts off looking at the right, or the alt-right, as it's called, and its growth over the last 10 or so years, as really a reaction against some of the things that happened online by the left. So she sees this toxicity on both sides, not of all people, but of these essential parts like the alt-right and also what she calls Tumblr liberalism. And they're feeding off each other and degrading the political debate in the process. So it's quite interesting. And it her argument stands in contrast to all those arguments which grew in the 90s and noughties about the internet being the entree to the wonderful new digital democracy and wonderful utopia promised on the internet.
Yeah, it's
and
so
as
true.
We know, it's not.
I know, because I had like one, I didn't have internet when I was away, and I had one day where I had access to, you know, a bit of Twitter for a while, and I just went, oh my gosh, it was just crazy, cruel, mean, nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
Sledging and driving people away, and I thought, okay, I'm out again.
And
I'm
she says that that is replacing really any coherent intellectual ideology on either side.
She's got a good point. Okay.
That feels true.
Yeah. Kill All Normies by Angela Nagel. Paige, you got any other recommendations for what we should do on the weekend?
Tomorrow I'm going to sit down and read my colleague Victoria Laurie's magazine feature. It's a cover story, a very powerful and personal story of a family whose son's died and they donated his organs. She's done a beautiful job, Victoria. It really takes you inside that family, and it's all happening at a time where we're thinking and talking about organ donation in a way that we perhaps weren't before. I had not realised that the number of people who donate has almost doubled. We seem to really understand now that this is important. Did you see the AFL this week struck a deal with, I think it's called Donor Life, and so all 18 league teams, including the women's teams and right down to community footy, they're going to promote this message every winter, every weekend.
Right. And Victoria's story is our feature story next hour. I'm going to chat to her on the show. She's our feature story. Yes, it's actually beautiful. I cried when I read it, because you normally don't get to meet a donor family, don't get to meet the recipient's family, but they do in this case, and it's a beautiful coming together. It's a great story of love, actually, as well as loss. So I recommend it as well. It's in the Oz Weekend Paper magazine tomorrow. And Mark, what are you listening to that you want to recommend for us?
Ezra Klein Show. He's a correspondent with Vox. People may know, and a lot of it is about politics. But this week he's got an interview with Eddie Izzard, who's one of my favourite comics.
He's amazing, yeah.
And
this is a podcast you're talking
this
about.
This is a podcast, yes. And it's a good length. It's about hour and 20, hour and 30 minutes, something like that.
That's long.
And there's the
but there's a lot of Eddie Izzard to share around.
Yeah, and especially the origins of the cake or death sketch, if anybody knows it. It's
What's
a famous
that?
One. It's essentially a send-up of the Church of England in England and how it's never been prone to extremism, and hence the attempt by a vicar to be extreme. Choose cake or death.
Right.
And
okay.
You have to listen to it, yeah. So, do you want cake or death? Cake, please. An Anglican vicar can never be a fundamentalist.
Yeah, right.
The argument. And it goes back to when he was in an Anglican boarding school as a child.
Ah.
So, he explains this background.
Right.
As well as his marathons, he did something like 43 or 47 marathons in 52 days. And another occasion, he did 27 marathons in 27 days.
Why?
Raising it for charity.
Really?
Yes.
It's
raising
like
money for
Ninja
charity.
Ninja Warrior. That's
yes. And he's wanting to stand for Parliament over there.
Is he?
Yeah, for the Labour Party. And so he's got those political ambitions. And he's brought out a book talking about his life and being a transvestite and coming out with that many years ago. So he's... Yeah, quite interesting in this podcast.
Mm. Okay, so it's Ezra Klein's podcast and it's called The Ezra Klein Show.
Yes.
Yep, it's on Vox for podcasts.
Yes.
If you're a podcaster, you can download an app for to get your favourite podcasts and you can have a search for that. And we podcast parts of Nightlife as well, so have a search for us. All right, well, thank you so much for your recommendations and for wrapping up the week for us. I feel like I'm back in reality now and I know what's going on. Thanks to you, Paige.
Thanks very much. I had a great time.
Good. Paige Taylor, who's the WA Bureau Chief for The Australian, and Mark Rolfe have been my guests. Mark's from the School of Social Sciences at the University of New South Wales. Thanks,
Thank
Mark.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. You're on Nightlife on ABC Radio.
Nightlife with Sarah McDonald on ABC Radio.